it's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilburn.
Hey, folks, and welcome back to another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and I'm excited to be with you as always. I have a cool episode for you today. And the reason why I think it's cool is because the individual that is here with me, Jose Socorro, is a Jersey boy like I am. He's from, not from Teaneck, but he's from close enough that we'll claim him. But he is from Jersey nonetheless. And I thought it was kind of ironic that I would run into him all the way here in Northwest Arkansas. And Jose and I connected online via LinkedIn, and we have some mutual friends. And it's so funny that what you realize about Northwest Arkansas is that while it might appear to be large, it really isn't. I mean, everything is, there's like 1 degree of separation for anyone that you can come in contact with here in Northwest Arkansas. And so I thought, man, it would be great to have this guy on my podcast just to kind of share his story, talk a little bit about his journey to Northwest Arkansas, how he got here, and really how he's making things happen on a regular basis. He is the regional director for JanPro of Arkansas, and so he's constantly out on his hustle, making connections with people left and right. He's the consummate salesman, and yeah, we just really vibed, and so I thought, why don't I bring him on the podcast? And so I hope you guys enjoy this episode. We are going to sit down and have a really in-depth conversation with Jose Socorro. Jose, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Randy. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, man, it's a pleasure that we finally get a chance to connect and sit down. We caught some coffee not long ago, and then I told you we would try to figure out some time for us to get together and have this podcast episode. And you know, one of the things that I enjoy doing with this podcast is just having regular folks tell their story. You know, what sets them apart from anybody else, right? I mean, what sets any of us apart from anyone else? That's always the question. Yeah. And so I think podcasting gives you a place and a platform and a canvas, if you will, to be able to share that story. And I think I always say this, and it's a well-worn phrase, there is nothing new under the sun. So anything that you're thinking about doing, somebody probably already has done it, meaning that there is always going to be a blueprint for success, for how you do things a certain way. And certainly in the arena that you're in, and sales and marketing and kind of getting out there and going door to door, literally to generate and drum up business, is one of the oldest activities in the book. And you have successfully done well with that. But I would love for you just to kind of share a little bit about your superhero origin story with our audience. Let them know a little bit about who Jose is and why they should even care about this episode.
Absolutely. Well, I want to say, give a shout out to the 201, also known as right. North Jersey.
That's right. That's
and
right.
So my parents are from the Caribbean. Dad's from the Dominican Republic. Mom's from Puerto Rico. And they met in Puerto Rico, and they got married. And in 1989, they had me. And I'm a native from Jersey City, New Jersey, which is where you would go to go visit the Statue of Liberty or Ellis Island on the Jersey side.
Sure.
The Hudson River is beautiful. It's a great, I wouldn't say divide, but a great little space between New Jersey and New York City. And historically, there's always love-hate, but we're not going to get into that because New York is okay in my book. But yeah, originally from Jersey City, and Hoboken's near Jersey City, home of Frank Sinatra.
Right.
Amazing eating. Apparently, I didn't know this, but there was over 50 realty offices a couple years ago when I checked in Hoboken. And it's a small little spot.
It is a small spot.
But it's also a great spot for dining, for socializing. Also, I've been told a lot of New York folks that work there live in Hoboken because the cost of living in New Jersey is fairly reasonable. Hard to believe that's a statement I can say about New Jersey.
Oh, I know.
It is true.
Because the taxes are high.
Oh, man. Everything. Every exit has a toll. If people thought Dallas was bad, they have no idea. They don't know.
They have no idea. So
grew up in Jersey, lived in Puerto Rico for a little bit, then moved back to Jersey around the mid-90s and started kindergarten I was bilingual at the time, so I didn't have a lot of English. So I had to kind of learn English with the bilingual students. And then eventually I learned English. And one of the things that I appreciate about having spoken or speaking two languages is that it was really common once you learn English for Hispanics to kind of forget speaking Spanish. But thankfully, my parents made sure that did not happen. And so I am so glad I speak two languages to this day, which in my current role, it helps out tremendously.
It has to.
It's one of my secret weapons.
Yeah.
The dual language, especially when communicating with the stakeholders for who I support and work for. So I was in Jersey, moved over all over Hudson County. And then I went to school in Southwest Missouri in 08, left Jersey. My parents dropped me off and said, son, you're on your own.
And but the thing about it is, like, how did you choose Southwest Missouri?
Well, I think at the time it was school. So I was wanting to be a pastor at the time.
Okay.
And I had went to a competition in Indiana, and I did well auditioning and submitting my information to the schools that were there. And the one school that actually reached out and offered me something, that I wasn't even looking at that school. There was a school in Pennsylvania that I was kind of looking at the time because my pastor had gone there. And I was like, well, it's not far from where I live. But interesting turn of events my senior year, my mom and I took a trip from New Jersey through every Greyhound bus stop from here to Southwest Missouri. And then I got to tour the school. And I was like, man, I really want to go here. And I ended up getting there on a music scholarship. At the time, I wanted to be a music teacher. Mm-hmm. I ended up switching to biblical studies. And then after that, I ended up doing a degree in business. I learned so many good things about business. I had a really good business professor that opened my eyes and kind of helped me through some of my misconceptions of business. And so from there, from 08 to 12, I lived in Southwest Missouri, Springfield, Missouri, to be exact. Great city.
Yeah.
And then in 2012, my dad went into business for the first time with a family member in South Jersey, right outside of Atlantic City. And so I was like, okay, that's where I'm going to go. At the time, if I had known what I'd known, I probably would not have gone, but it was more than me. It was a calling, and it was an assignment. Mm-hmm. I needed to be there to help my dad. But I got some really great experiences from it, learning how to file LLCs, learning how to follow the rigorous process to get a business approved, especially in a state like New Jersey, where there's a lot of regulations and rules.
Bureaucracy is king
its finest.
In Jersey.
And the thing is, I had an associate's degree, so it wasn't like I had a four-year degree. I ended up, so when I was in school, because I switched my degrees and I wanted to keep it at a feasible cost, even though I'm paying it back is not as feasible, but I ended up going to a two-year degree program, even though it took me 4 years, because I ended up going part-time my last 2 years of school, but working, which really helped. And again, it was just, at the time, the best option. I didn't want to be a college dropout.
Yeah.
So I said, this is probably the next best option. And so I went in there, helped my dad with the business. I mean, he had some big ideas and expenses, and I can remember telling him, I know I'm your son, and in the Hispanic culture, the kids don't speak up to the parents. But I'm going to tell you that we are not going to drop money on these certain equipment and tools. And thankfully, we found a way around it and found alternatives.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because Hurricane Sandy hit around that time.
Yeah.
And so that was
a devastating effect on Jersey.
Yeah. And I guess my one advice, if you're having a business and you don't think you don't need that insurance, let me encourage you to reconsider, because that was an interesting lesson learned the hard way. My dad and uncle recovered from the experience, but it was a painful
recovery.
It was painful. I mean, that hurricane punched hard. You know, at the time, I was working two part-time jobs because dad really couldn't afford to keep me on. So I was like, let me go work, but I'm going to help you because I came here to help the business and help you what I can. The benefits of speaking English and Spanish definitely kicked in big time with my dad. And even that season was really helpful. Mm-hmm. I mean, we grew closer. We had a good relationship, but we grew even more during that time. And then I was coaching high school football. I always love sharing that story. If I can always insert, I coached high school football because I was aspiring to be a college football coach, even though I didn't play in college or anything. It was one of those things. I want to do it.
Yeah.
So I did it for about 2 years there, a small little Catholic high school. We won states our first year. That was great. And then the second year we went again, we did not win, but it was overall a good experience. And then I was also managing schools. I got my associates, and then I was working on my online degree program through Oral Roberts University, which I'm telling you, football is a game of inches. And I'll mention that even though ORU doesn't have a football program, my GPA was barely good enough to get in the door. But all I needed to do was get in the door, because I knew once I was in the door, I was going to do well. My GPA actually went up because the online model worked well for me, because I was able to work full time. And I was able to do work, because I'm a late guy. I don't go to bed till like late. I mean, like after midnight.
Yeah.
I can put in a few more hours of work, and that's kind of carried through where I am now. But that just kind of my story. I was in Jersey, and then in 2015, I moved to Oklahoma to finish up at ORU.
In person.
In person.
Yeah.
Even though I was still an online student, but I lived in town. So now I was able to kind of experience Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is one of my other favorite places.
Okay.
Tulsa, Oklahoma, Springfield, Missouri, and obviously Jersey, but Northwest Arkansas is number one. Because I remember when I was in school in Southwest Missouri at Evangel University, we would do business competitions in Rogers Embassy Suites. Mm-hmm. And I can remember, because this is what I always remember, standing at Embassy Suites and being able to see the Coca-Cola sign, but it's now Cross and Construction.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking over across the street. There's a big Home Depot. There's an Olive Garden and a Red Lobster. And I'm like, this place is amazing. Stuff like this in Jersey, you're having to drive ways.
Yeah.
And it's in really nice cities and counties where it's like, oh man, I'm not ready for that yet.
Yeah.
But being able to see all that, that's what I remember the most about Northwest Arkansas my first time. Like, I want to be back here one day.
Yeah. I remember you told me that. I was like, wow, that's kind of cool. I mean, you had a little taste of Northwest Arkansas and got a feel for what it was like.
Oh, and every time I came down here during my college days, I loved it. I always enjoyed it. And actually, it's interesting because Northwest Arkansas, this is not something I share with too many people, but
well, now you're sharing it with the world.
So. I'm going to share it now.
Yeah, that's okay.
Because when it came to driving, I'm shy, and most people would say he's not a shy guy, but I had only driven in Springfield, even though I had my license. I only drove in Springfield. I had to drive to Northwest Arkansas. Jack Shoemaker, very prominent Walmart executive, worked really close with Sam Walton, had passed away. And I was trying to get anybody to come with me on this trip just so that I didn't have to drive by myself, because I've never done this drive. I didn't have a GPS.
Right.
And I was like, I'm driving 2 hours into a different state I know very little about. And the only times I've been to Arkansas, I had a group of people with me.
Yeah.
So it was kind of one of those big learning moments where like, all right, here I go. I made it to the memorial service. Mm-hmm. I remember because I had to change at a neighborhood Walmart, too. That was kind of interesting. And then I remember I was there for a brief time. I'd seen some very successful folks that were there, pay their respects to Mr. Shoemaker.
Wait a minute. How did you get invited to that funeral?
Well, I was involved with an organization called Students and Free Enterprise, which is now called Enactus. And that organization was a game changer for me in college. I mean, the people I met, the professors, the recruiters, the businesses, I mean, that really played a big part into realizing business is good.
Yeah.
Because I used to think business is the root of many evils, and it still can be, but it's like it could be used for good when you have the right attitude and mindset.
Yeah. I think, and not to cut you off, I think when I think about business, I think of it the same way I think about money, right? It's like, you know, it's that the love of money is the root of all evil, not money itself.
Right.
I mean, money is just this object, and business in the same vein, right? But when you operate a business and it's only for your glory and not somebody else's, not to benefit somebody else, then you run into a problem. And I really go back to thinking about Sam Walton and why he even started Walmart to begin with. And when you think of like when he was with Ben Franklin's 5 and 10, and then eventually started Walmart, and he wanted to benefit the average consumer that didn't have a lot of choices. And because of that focus, which, you know, theoretically Walmart still operates with from today, you know, that makes a big difference. And that's when you're doing something and it's not just about you. Yes. Did Sam Walton benefit from starting Walmart? 100% he did. But there's a lot of other people that have benefited from that as well.
And I want to tell you, I love his book.
Oh, it's great.
Someone gave it to me that I went to school with and worked at Walmart at one time. And that book was so inspirational that I tell everyone, every college student in America should be reading that book. Whether you agree with him or not, it is amazing. The only thing, and Mizzou fans aren't going to like it. You know, I'm not the biggest Mizzou fan, but I got to give them respects because they have Sam Walton and they have a lot of recognizable alum. And a good portion of them really are big time contributors to the growth of Northwest Arkansas, particularly with Walmart and vendors.
Sure.
But, you know, that's the little joke, the jab, because I have Mizzou friends all over. So I tease them a little bit and I'm like, yeah, you guys are doing good. So.
I think, you know, it's funny you mentioned, I think that and I don't know if Walmart does this, but I think like that should be like required reading.
When
you start with the company, you should get like a swag bag with like a little bit of Walmart like stuff, you know, some paraphernalia, hat, t-shirt, sweater, hoodie, whatever. And then you should get that Sam Walton autobiography, which is amazing. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes for a podcast that I listen to quite a bit. And I think those of you that listen to this podcast will enjoy that podcast. It's called Founders. And in that podcast, this guy reads, his goal is to read 1,000 biographies. And one of them was Sam Walton. Actually, he's done like 2, maybe 3 episodes on Sam Walton. All of them are amazing. But just talking about Sam Walton's life and how Sam Walton, you know, started Walmart and how, you know, what it was like for those, that first group of people that came in with him to work with him and that, you know, the original people that got stock, and then talks about how he got the idea for Sam's Club. Because again, there's nothing new under the sun, but he hung out with a guy named Saul Price out in California who ran the Price Club. And that's how he got the idea of Sam's Club. And he leveraged that to start Sam's Club. And then, you know, Sam's Club started off slow. And then it was just a hockey stick up and to the right,
right.
You know, as it grew. And so, but again, you know, just looking at his story and the arc of, you know, he had trouble. I mean, don't get me wrong. That's how life is. But he overcame even the challenges that he ran into to ultimately build this behemoth that we know today that, I mean, next to alongside of Amazon, I would say they're the two most consequential outlets in America for commerce.
Oh, absolutely. And Jack Shoemaker is actually one of the originals. I was told he was the guy that brought the barcode.
Okay. Okay.
And that was pretty impressive because Mr. Shoemaker was really big with students and free enterprise. There's a video on YouTube.
I think I remember, but he's also in the museum too.
I
think so,
yeah.
Because there's a whole thing in the museum about the barcode and the significance of mm-hmm. it and why it was so important. So,
and I remember there's a video that was a celebration of Mr. Shoemaker, and there's a conversation that he shares of having with Mr. Walton. He was approached about supporting Syve, and then Mr. Walton to that individual said, "I think Mr. Shoemaker would be good." I mean, obviously he said Jack, but. And then from there, it just grew. Because I met Jack Shoemaker once. And
yeah.
I got to shake his hand. It was kind of like being a celebrity or being a president.
Right.
And I remember because it was in Minneapolis in 2011 or 2010. And I was trying to find a way to just shake his hand. There was a time, and I still do this now, where if there's someone who's very well known, I'm going to go at least say hello. Nice to meet you. And I remember our paths crossed.
Mm-hmm.
I shook his hand. I said, "How are you, Mr. Shoemaker?" He asked for my name. And then he shared a Chinese proverb with me. And this Chinese proverb went along the lines of, "You're going to have an impact, a positive impact for many years or to a group of people." I was like, I never even met the guy, just first time. And I was like, man, I can appreciate that. I forgot the proverb, so I have to remember kind of the origins of it. But I mean, the student, he loved the students.
Yeah.
Mr. Shoemaker was about the students. I mean, he had awards. I mean, the students, I mean, there's videos and testimonials. I mean, there's so many Walmart and vendors that were part of Syve around the time I did that were in those big schools that can share their experiences with Mr. Shoemaker. I wish there was a way we can kind of celebrate and bring him more up because, I mean, he played a big part in providing opportunities for students with his resources and network. So,
yeah, it seems like everybody that was a FOS, Friend of Sam, that was in the early days of Walmart has done something, you know, in the community, right? So like what Mr. Shoemaker has done and what others have done. And you think of all of those top, and we hear their names mentioned all the time when we go around. There's buildings and other things named after some of these people. But it's always interesting when you see just the impact that one individual can have on so many people.
Absolutely.
And then because of that, I think people saw, you know, how Sam Walton operated, and they wanted to operate similar to that. Now, everybody couldn't do exactly what he did, but they said in their own way, you know, they said, I'm going to carve out something for me that I can then give out to the world. And I think that's important for people to recognize. A lot of times we feel like, oh, I could never do what Sam Walton did or what Oprah or fill in the blank, any other amazing individual did. But no, nobody's asking you to do that. I think what the universe is asking for folks to do is to do the best they can with what they have. And that might be on a much more limited scope, but it still doesn't mean that you can't impact or change the life of even one individual. And the thing about it is that, and I know I'm going off on a tangent here, changing the life of one individual can have repercussive effects for centuries, like literally. And so that's why I say, you know, you open the door for somebody, you make a way for somebody to do something that they wouldn't normally be able to do because you're in a position to make that happen. You just don't know how quickly you can change someone's trajectory just by, you know, not just being nice to them, but creating an opportunity for them that maybe they wouldn't have been able to create on their own.
No, absolutely. Thankful for him and really appreciate the opportunities that I had in college. Because, you know, Jersey folks, this is interesting because I'm going to tie into how I got to where I am now talking with you. You know, I had a professor in college in Missouri, and she was like, you know, Jose, you're a little different. And not in personality, yes, but, and this is where I realized it's a different playing field, but I think I have to be aware of this moving forward. Mm-hmm. New Jersey or Northeast folks have this tendency that if it says 50 as a speed limit and you're driving, we'll go 60 to 70.
Yeah.
And in the Midwest, if it's 50, they're probably going 30 to 40.
Right.
And that was a really good visual and reminder. I'm like, okay, she's saying something. I kind of get what she's getting at, but it really challenged me to be like, okay, I need to scale back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Hispanic. We're affectionate individuals. We love hugs, handshakes. Well, more hugs than handshakes, but not everyone's reciprocates those hugs well. So I've had to learn to handshake. Sometimes I don't even do the handshake. It's like, hi, how you doing?
Yeah.
From a distance. So the I don't know if it's social cues. That's the word I'm looking for.
Sure.
I had to learn that very quickly in the beginning of 2008. But I do like the pace that the Midwest embraces and has, which is you can go fast, but you can relax.
Yeah.
I have family that every weekend they've got to do something. And yeah. I've learned and began to appreciate I don't always have to be going. Now, mm-hmm. I do DJ weddings on the side, so there are seasons where I am out every Saturday.
On your grind.
But, you know, for the most part, I can call it a job. It pays.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, even if it didn't, it's still something good. But learning to slow it down has been a good thing. So when I was in Jersey, I moved to Oklahoma in 2015 for school. And then I, through a friend, met my wife. We met at the church across the university.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, the founding pastors of that church are from Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
The Dohertys. And they're great people. When we met, we connected. And then, you know, in 2017, she said yes. And I married an Arkansas girl, which meant that instead of going to Dallas, which we were talking about, we ended up moving to Northwest Arkansas, which was kind of a full circle. I don't know if it's deja vu or rendezvous, but you know, I always wanted to live in Northwest Arkansas. And so in 2018, we made that happen.
Yeah.
And so we lived in the Rogers area, an area that I kind of was pretty familiar with before. And so like, here I am. And then I was at J.B. Hunt for a couple of years. Was at J.B. Hunt during COVID. That was fun. Boy, talk about dynamics of freight and demand changing.
Logistics.
Oh, man. We were right there. But it was a good learning experience. J.B. Hunt's a good place. They have good people. It's not perfect, but
no.
I tell you, no place is. The one thing about J.B. Hunt that I can appreciate and like is when you hear from executives in the past, they'll tell you, yeah, I've interviewed at Walmart and Tyson, and of all of those, J.B. Hunt always had opened a door. And I think that's great. Now, I know there's J.B. Hunt folks that go to Walmart, but, you know, J.B. Hunt, I mean, you were talking about operational excellence 24/7.
Yeah.
I can remember where I really got sunk my teeth in or really started to grow as a broker. Was like that 2 months before COVID, and we had a customer that traveled all over the country, and I remember having to cover 20 loads, and at one time I was even up at like after 2 a.m. covering a couple of trucks because pickup was happening within an hour.
Yeah,
and from that Sunday to Monday, because I was like 24 hours at home, there were no kids at the time, and so it was one of those where we stayed home. We did our thing, but I was just working. The team was very happy because every load was covered. We had an issue with one, but we got it resolved. But just the fact that I was like unproven, untested, mm-hmm. and that weekend proved, oh, this guy has potential.
Yeah.
This guy can kind of do it. It's like in the movie Grinch, the cartoon one, where Max is trying to push the sleigh and he gets buried in snow. And next thing you know, the sleigh starts moving and he kind of rises up and then just starts going. That's kind of like what that moment was because, you know, I was middle of the pack and like when I had another opportunity present itself, so I moved on from J.B. Hunt. When I left at J.B. Hunt, I went from middle of the road to like top three.
Sure.
And there were numbers that backed that up. But I really learned a lot, enjoyed it. J.B. Hunt provided so many good opportunities. I was involved with the Toastmasters Club.
Okay.
We did some really cool things there. And then Work Matters, another colleague and I in the engineering department, we kind of held workplace studies. And then Wreaths Across America, that was really cool to be involved with that. Because when I moved over to Central States, which I was there for about 2 years as well, I actually brought the Wreaths Across America program. And now it went from just a donation from like 13 locations to now they're sending drivers to deliver and pick up wreaths. And now it's grown. So it's just been really cool to see, you know, because at the time we didn't really have much for military initiatives because Central States, a company that gives. I mean, mm-hmm. they are in the community. They do all kinds of great things from leadership down. And so the military component was like, because a portion of our the drivers at Central States are veterans.
Sure.
And so I was like, what a great way. Because I get into the habit anywhere I am, if I see someone with some sort of military apparel, I'm going to go shake hand and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing how receptive they are to that.
Yeah.
I'm like, this should be normal.
Yep.
I mean, you guys did something that I had to select the service card number ready to go. And I'm so glad we never did the draft, but that number was ready. So if the draft happened and my number got called, I was going, but I don't think I was ready mentally, sure. emotionally, but it's just amazing to a project like that to see how it's carried on and grown. And then I had moved to Fort Smith a couple of years ago. That's where I'm at now. And worked with a food manufacturer for a brief time. And we moved on from that. And in 24, I started with JamPro. What's interesting about JamPro, not interesting, but a fun fact, it's the title does not mean anything. Nobody had to tell me that. And I say that because my job is to support the small business owners that have bought in to do business with JamPro.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're partners, not employees. So my job is to make sure I am getting in front of as many businesses as possible to say, hey, we have a solution. We have a great option for you. If it's a great fit, let's move forward. If not, let me circle back with you another time.
Yeah.
And it's just been amazing because it's perspective. You hear about it. There's great books on it, but it gets missed depending on, you know, who you are and what you're doing. I work for certain groups of people. They may support me. I don't know that they work for me. And I say that because the franchisees, hey, if they do well, I do well. You know, I have a job because they're doing well. They're able to maintain support. Their customers are providing great cleaning services. And then there's a support staff that I work with that, you know, they're part of their roles is to check in with the franchisees and the customers. Mm-hmm. Then we have an amazing office manager. She does a great job making sure I submit everything necessary for billing and all. So I work for them. They don't necessarily work for me.
Right.
It's a team effort. So I have a lot of bosses. I don't think I'm a boss, but I just know I got to make sure I have activity and work to make sure, hey, the lights are kept on, they're doing well, and the customers are getting taken care of.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do at JamPro. I mean, I support, I'm in Northwest Arkansas a good amount of time through Fort Smith. I'm involved with the chambers. We're members of the Springdale and Rogers Lowell Chamber. I'm ambassador for both. And then I'm also a member of the Fort Smith Chamber. All three are really good chambers. They do a great job of meeting the needs of the business community and of the community. And they find a way to really present opportunities to the ambassadors and the members. I'm also involved with a commercial real estate group called the Contractors, Closers, and Connections.
Mm-hmm.
I've been serving on that group as a leader since it started in 2024. And we've done some really amazing things. We do 4 events a year. We support a local nonprofit at every event. And we're going into year 3. A lot of growth, a lot of great things happening. We're adding 2 new amazing leaders in the business community in Northwest. And now I don't have to do as much as I had to. There's a lot of hats I wore, but I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. It reminded me of my J.B. Hunt Toastmaster days, wearing multiple hats and just sharing the word. And so there's been some really cool things with those groups. I mean, public relations, I've always enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
So I get to do some of those things as a giving back. And it's just been amazing, the response and the publications and all through the work we do.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you strike me as somebody that kind of gets your hustle on. You get out there and you get in front of folks and it's just like wash, rinse, and repeat. You know, you just keep doing it. And some days it doesn't always work out the way you want it to. And in other days, it's amazing. What advice would you give to younger people listening to this that are just coming through high school, or maybe they were like you were back in the day when you were at Evangel and they're either finishing their associate's degree or just finishing up a college degree, and now they're looking at the prospects of getting out there and, and working. And unfortunately, what is a very challenging work environment, just with AI and with a lot of changes, right, that are happening, that, I mean, I've got you by a few years, but man, when I graduated from college, I did not nearly have the obstacles in front of me that, and they're not necessarily obstacles, but it's like things are different now, right? And so for young people to hear an encouraging word in terms of what would you say to them, knowing what you know now, in terms of these are the things that you need to be doing in order to be successful.
There's going to be a few things. I think the first thing is be proficient in Excel.
Okay.
That's the biggest takeaway. When I was in Fort Smith with that one manufacturing group, that was a bite your teeth, get your teeth kicked in, hard experience of Excel. You don't have to know all the fancy formulas. You just got to know the basics.
Yeah.
It's got to be more than just putting in information and creating really nice tables. It's really knowing how to use those functions of multiplication, division, subtraction. It sounds redundant and plain, but let me tell you, I mean, it really makes a difference when you know your numbers. I think I had one boss of mine who said, you need to know the details better than your boss. So here, let me help you out. Excel's hard. It's painful. It's not fun. But once you get over the hump, it's going to benefit. I think the biggest thing is make sure your LinkedIn's up and going. Don't treat it like Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Randy, you and I see people all the time treat LinkedIn like Facebook, and you just, you know, rub your head or you shake your head, and it's like, this is not it. I have competitors that treat their LinkedIn like a Facebook. And let me tell you, nothing's more unattractive than criticizing or bashing other people.
Yeah.
That's just a no-no. You could do that in other platforms.
Sure. Sure.
On LinkedIn, we maybe want to be careful, especially if you're in the sales operation space, because customers are watching.
Yeah.
I mean, I have stories, but we're not going to get into that. But the first point is get Excel down, get over it. You're going to be fine. Get your LinkedIn polished. Treat it like professional network and read. Read the things that interest you, but read the things that will challenge you. The Harvard Business Review has always been one of those publications that you could just learn so much. If you don't know what to do, just read the Harvard Business Review. Kind of get a feel for what they're doing, because they are so amazing. They're very operational, very academic, but it's process driven.
Yeah.
And it's a simple read. It can get complicated, mm-hmm. but it's a simple read from the standpoint of, here's what I want to convince you on. And then here are the steps to get there.
Yeah.
That's very doable. It's not hard. Nothing hard about that. And then I think the thing I'm learning now with in the world of sales that I'm in is, well, reading would be one, but really understand what's going on in the region.
Yeah.
Understand what's moving, who are the movers and the shakers, and get acquainted and understand that your competitors are going to have advantages over you, but that doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
It's like a football philosophy. There's a time, and they still do it, where coaches in the college and the high school level, they want to be fancy. They're going to go to Madden, the video game, and they're going to throw out every play. And one thing I've learned in my time coaching many years ago is the fancy stuff isn't going to get you. It's not it's how you win. You win by the fundamentals and the basics.
Yeah.
Nick Saban, obviously, that's a well-known name. That guy is so old school because he's focused on, what are you doing in your position? I'm not worried about what the play is doing. I want to know, what are you doing exactly every time this play happens? It's focusing on your part in the big scheme of things.
Right.
And that is a very unattractive thing today, and mm-hmm. had never been attractive, but it's the thing that is proven, especially with all the changes in our world of sports and technology. The old school, the basics, the fundamentals, what our grandparents did is still the proven model to really do well, whether in sales or not.
The phrase that comes to mind when you say that is like majoring in the minors.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the little things every day. I tell my boys this all the time. It's like, you know, just being on time. Early is on time. And on time is late. Just, you know, giving yourself an extra window just to get yourself prepared. You know, think about what you're going to do the day before you actually do it. Little things like that go a long way and really separate, as I like to say, the wheat from the chaff. It really separates people. And I think in an environment where employment, getting a job is even harder now than it was before, you know, those little things can separate you and be the difference maker between you getting a call back for a potential job opportunity, or somebody saying, hey, I was really struck by the way you carried yourself in this meeting, or I really like how firm you shook my hand and you looked me in the eye and, you know, you had a thoughtful response. And even when you didn't know what to say, you said as much, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, you don't have to fake the funk. I mean, a lot of times you just got to put yourself out there, because we've all been there. we've all been at a loss for words. We've all been in places where maybe we don't know how to put our best foot forward. So we do the best that we can with what we have.
Right. And I think, you know, to go back to the points, the Excel, the LinkedIn, the reading.
Yeah.
It's a popular sports term, keeping your head on a swivel.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what that meant for a while. I just heard it when you watch a football game, when you're in coaching sessions. But I think it's being aware of your surroundings, learning to read the room, learning to read people. And the more you read people and the more you learn and understand social cues, the better it is for you.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, hey, I need to stop talking, or hey, I need to not approach this person this way. I just need to keep it cool and simple.
Yeah.
I mean, learning to read the room helps. But it's also attitude and demeanor. I mean, obviously at 18, 19, 20, 22 age range, I know it all. I don't need help. I'm like, well, that's not true.
No.
But I think the sooner you can keep an open mind, the better it is. And there's no shortcuts. The shortcuts really, and people can read through the fluff. You know, that head on the swivel and reading the room, people can read through the fake and disingenuine, you know, approach that people have. And it's like, what's that?
No. Yeah.
And so the sooner you can master that, the better you'll be prepared mentally and emotionally. And hey, you may not get the outcome you wanted, but if you're more prepared and you're not shocked, because like I put my eggs in this one basket that if I do this, this is going to work. And your eggs just break
right
because they hit the ground. And you realize this is now how I need to go about it.
Yeah.
Well, you're emotionally out of it. So you're now surviving, not like thriving. Or afloat.
Yeah.
This is just an interesting thought there.
No, it is, man. And we could go on all day about that. I think it's, you know, I don't know that. I think I'd mentioned this book to you that I've been reading Scott Galloway's book, Notes on Being a Man. And especially for young men, I think this is an area where they struggle. Humility, being able to say, hey, I made a mistake. Little things like that. We're all there. But, you know, I keep telling my son, I have a 20-year-old, a 19-year-old, and a 15-year-old. A lot of the regular listeners know that. But you know, I tell all of them, but especially my 20 and 19 year old, I'm like, listen, you guys are still figuring things out. You got another, like the 20 year old, I'm like, you got 5 years. The 19 year old, you got 6 years. You know, you're still formulating, your brain is still forming and developing. And so you've got to be patient with the process and don't try to circumvent it. Don't try to short circuit it. Let it happen and develop yourself because, you know, you want to be the best version of yourself. And that's going to require you going through some iterative processes where you're going to make mistakes and you're going to fall flat on your face. And, you know, whether it could be for a number of reasons, but I just continue. Lately, I've realized how much I want to encourage young men, especially because women don't struggle as much in this area. I mean, yeah, they struggle with some issues. I'm not saying that they're immune to it, but young men right now are really struggling with loneliness and a lot of other factors that are defeating their mindset. And I'm trying to tell these young guys, listen, it's a long game. And I really want you to be encouraged by the process and embrace it and embrace the suck because there's going to be moments when it really is tough.
And let me tell you, faith played a big part.
Yeah.
Because in 2012, I just graduated with a 2-year degree.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a pleasant experience when my colleagues are graduating with 4-year degrees.
And big jobs.
Right. And here I am graduating with a 2-year degree, going into a situation that I have ideas. But then when I get to New Jersey and learn how wow the whole thing was, I'm like, man, it's too late to walk away. But yeah. I mean, I was like, all right, my God, we're going to do this. Everybody has different methods, you know, faith, self-help. But faith was a big driver because like, all right, this is the time where I need to embrace the suck, embrace the uncomfortable. And realize that there's good. And it really has been the last few years where I've realized, hey, what I call suck really is a way to help me to get prepared for what's ahead.
Yeah.
And that's easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in my mid-30s. And so...
I'm still young, man. You're still young. Yeah.
But that brings me to a point. Gratitude has been a big part.
Mm-hmm.
Gratitude really opens a lot of doors, perspective and mindset, emotion-wise. Because I could... You know, New Jersey gets a bad rap. It really does. But I tell you what, I am really thankful for being raised there, for doing life there. And my parents are amazing people. You know, they went to college. They didn't finish.
Yeah.
But they went to school and they embraced a lot of suck to put my sisters and I through high school to get us to college. All my sisters and I, we're college graduates. We're working. We're doing well.
Yeah.
I mean, they did more than they could. And, you know, my parents on occasion, I'm like, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't do much. Are you kidding me? You foot the bill. You did all these things for me.
Yeah.
And things that, I mean, so that you guys did more. But, you know, being in Jersey, there's a lot of pluses to it. I mean, you know, cost of living is one thing, but just the environment, just having to, you have to be street smart.
Yeah.
I mean, where you and I are from, you definitely have to know your surroundings and whereabouts. You can't be naive and foolish.
Yeah.
I mean,
and Jersey City was certainly a little bit more than Teaneck. Teaneck was a bedroom community, and Jersey City is a lot different. And I mean, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a badge of honor to say I am from Jersey because, you know, there's a lot of traditions.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's
the Garden State.
The Garden State. It's a prominent Catholic state.
Yeah.
So, you know, Catholic high school football is really big out there.
It is. And
you know, like there's a lot of coaches that were, to me, an inspiration just because of how they carried themselves and how they were able to take young men and win and do things that at that time weren't a big thing. You know, you had teams from North Jersey going to play some of the biggest teams in the country and beat them.
Right.
And you had a lot of recruits. I mean, I went to high school with a guy that got 43 offers and ended up playing at Penn State during Joe Paterno's last years.
Wow.
I mean, and that's no light tie. I mean, Jersey's, you know, St. Anthony's with Coach Hurley.
Sure.
I mean, that's basketball at its finest right there. A cop that gave his time to a school that barely can make ends meet. But it was more than just the glory. It's about developing young men and trying to see the things that he learned and saw as a cop and say, hey, I don't want you guys going through this.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a chip on your shoulder. It's a badge of honor. And there's a lot of good things that come out from being from Jersey.
Absolutely.
But being in Northwest Arkansas has been amazing. I mean, my boys are Arkansas boys. They're born here. You know, my wife's from here. Her family's here. I love it. I don't see myself moving anywhere. I mean, I always do get asked the question, hey, would you move back up to Northwest? Not anytime soon.
You mean to Northeast?
To back up to Northwest, being that I'm in Fort Smith.
Oh, right. I got you.
But there's many places in the state that are amazing that I would consider moving for the right opportunity if I wanted to move.
Sure,
but
sure.
Northwest Arkansas is great. Great to raise family. Good dining. It may not have the big city feel, but I'm going to tell you, being from the big city,
it's overrated at times.
It is.
But I like it. I like it when I go back. And, you know, I was just back in the New York City for New Year's this past year, and it's been almost a year ago, but, you know, there's nothing like going back home like that
and
just having that experience, and you're reminded of it. But then it's like, it's nice that sometimes, you know, you can just go somewhere and see the stars up above you, and it's just different. You know what I'm saying? And it really is. And the traffic. Yeah. And I tell people all the time, like, cause I laugh when people complain about traffic between Fayetteville and Bentonville. I'm like, you have no idea.
The Garden State Parkway.
Oh my goodness.
The George Washington. I'm one time
going through the Holland Tunnel. I mean, you name it. I mean,
tunnels are bad. My dad used to take me to Met games.
Yeah.
And those tunnels, I mean, you're waiting an hour.
Yeah.
One time, many years ago on a Sunday, I was going to Connecticut to see family, and then I had some work things to do the next day, and it was a 2-hour traffic.
Yeah.
To get from Jersey through the bridge into New York. And it's not a peach walk either, because once you get over the bridge into like the boroughs, Manhattan and all that, that's like standing traffic.
Sure.
It's bumper to bumper. And then I had another funny story. When my wife came to see family, we went to Connecticut. It was like almost 2.5 hours to get out of New York over the bridge into Jersey.
Yeah.
And so, but I mean, those experiences are.
And you probably went the distance that would be equivalent to leaving Fort Smith and maybe getting to the Bobby Hopper Tunnel.
If
not that far.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's the crazy thing.
Yeah,
you're not driving far distances, but it can take forever.
It can take forever.
So, yeah.
But I mean, it's a gratitude because, you know, my parents didn't have what I had.
Sure.
And things were very different for them when they were my age. And then I go back, I'm like, they did a lot, and they did it above and beyond. You're not even barely speaking English. I mean, now they speak good English now, but back then, and I was no cakewalk as a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I was probably the kid out of my siblings, but, you know, thankfully between my parents doing everything they can to get me the right help and support and the good Lord, man, we've come a long way. We've come a long way. I'm in a better spot for my wife and kids than I probably was when I was little. So.
Well, that's good. I mean, well, you know, like I said, I tell people all the time, and I say this, I've said this a number of times on the podcast, is that, you know, whatever your parents' ceiling is your floor. So, you know, your parents may have done some amazing things, but clearly, you know, if they've done it right and set you up for success, then, you know, their high is where you're starting off from. And then you're building on top of that. So I think that's like the only way you can look at it, or you should look at it. Right.
That's
so,
good yeah. perspective. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. That's good. So yeah, their ceiling is your floor. So you got nowhere to go but up. And the same will be said for your kids. So listen, before we wrap up, what else would you want to share with somebody listening to this that's maybe thinking about relocating to Northwest Arkansas about this area? What makes it so special, whether from a business perspective, from just a living perspective? What makes this area so special and has you staying here, calling it home?
I think the biggest thing is the quality of life aspect, the housing, the options, amenities. It's not a big city feel, but it doesn't need to be. And if you have a young family and you want to buy a house within cost, this is the area between the schools, between the things you can do, and the drive to big cities. I mean, you have Tulsa, you have Dallas, it's 5 hours. I mean, Tulsa's about two, and you have Little Rock. And, I mean, there's just a lot
Kansas
going
City.
On here. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Kansas City's amazing.
It is.
But I think the thing here is if you come from a part of the country where you're paying a lot, you come out to the Midwest, those expenses are going to be minimal. Your dollar will go further.
Sure.
Because I've had family come out to Northwest Arkansas. They love it. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to leave Jersey because that's all they know.
Yeah.
But when they come out here, they realize, man, the house is amazing. The cost, you know, the salaries, the opportunities are amazing. It's a different pace. And with the way our country is going, you obviously, if you have kids, you obviously want to be in an environment where there's good resources, good schools, and good homes. But if you're a bachelor, hey, when you have Fortune One in your backyard and everything Fortune One brings, I think you can just, you'll be fine. I promise there's good activity, good things. Maybe you're a city slicker and you live for that nightlife. Hey, that's fine, but I promise
you. Can drive 5 hours to Dallas or go to Kansas City.
Yeah.
I mean, but they're all, you know, they're smaller cities. Even Dallas to me, I mean, coming from New York, Dallas is like, oh, it's a great city, but it's not like New York City. It's like, I mean, I can get my arms around downtown Dallas, or I can get my arm. Well, Houston's a little bit bigger, but I can get my arms around it. But, you know, it's. You can't compare it to places that are like, there is no comparison.
Right. And the change of pace is the big one, because there's a lot of self-help and mental health.
Yeah.
And mental health is kind of, it has been on the rise for years.
Sure.
And honestly, Northwest Arkansas provides a different outlook on that balanced approach of
absolutely
the stresses. And I think that's something that people look at. I mean, alcohol consumption on a random note is down.
Yeah.
And just peace and quiet and relaxation is kind of really starting to become more of a priority. Where we were growing up, that was no such thing. You just took it with stride,
right.
And you
right.
went from A to B, and that's it.
That was
and
it.
You didn't even bring it up.
Yeah.
Because you'd hear from your relatives and all, and you didn't want to hear from your relatives.
Sure.
So I think out here is different. Give it a chance, especially if you're under 30 and you get a great opportunity. Hey, you serve your time and you move on. But with all the changes in business where all the big companies are going to an office, and they want you here.
Yeah.
It's not that bad. Because once you have a family, you realize, boy, I've really made a good move.
Yeah.
I made a good move coming out here. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, on that note, he is Jose Socorro, man. Jose, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast.
You.
If people want to connect with you because they just like your vibe, man, and what's the best way for somebody to do that?
LinkedIn would be a good way.
Okay. We'll put your LinkedIn post. We'll put your LinkedIn profile on our show notes so anybody can connect with you and maybe if they even want to do business with you. So
hey, I always welcome an opportunity.
That's not why you came on here, I'm putting it out there. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you,
absolutely, man. Well, Jose Socorro, thank you so much for joining us, man. We wish you and your family nothing but the best continually, and thank you for joining us on this episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, folks, there you have it. Another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. We're excited to bring you this conversation with Jose. If you enjoyed this, please let us know. You can always write a review of the podcast on any of the major podcasting platforms. We'd also love for you to follow us and smash that like button when it comes to following the podcast on your major podcasting platform as well. So we would certainly appreciate that. Remember, our podcast comes out rain or shine every Monday. We have a new episode. So we look forward to seeing you right back here at this appointed time next week. Until then, I hope to catch up with you at some point in time in the future, somewhere roaming around Northwest Arkansas. If you ever want to catch up with us or catch up with me, just hit me up at hello@iamnorthwestarkansas.com. I'm happy to grab a coffee with you or just catch up just the same way that I did with Jose. So really appreciate you listening to this podcast. And remember, sign up for our newsletter too. Our newsletter comes out pretty much weekly now, and we try to provide some additional information outside of the podcast and that newsletter each week. So that's all I have for you this week. We will see you next week for another new episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit iamnorthwestarkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.